You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm excited because we got a bonus episode.
Yeah, I think we made this happen during the series.
Yes. So if you've been following along Thursday mornings for the last 6 weeks, we had a fantastic series with Benjamin Kolodgyi. And we mentioned, I think, while we were talking with Benjamin, we need to have one more episode to talk about how this project happened. So that's what we get to do today. I'm excited about that conversation. Can't wait to have it. Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University, Nebraska. You can learn more about Concordia University, Nebraska by visiting cune.edu. Joining us today, Benjamin Kolodgyi, church organist and musicologist, also author of Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music, a fantastic book that we've been talking about for the last 6 weeks. Benjamin, welcome back.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Also joining us today, the Reverend Scott Shilby. He's assistant pastor and minister of music at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church in Overland here in the St. Louis area. And he also serves as a theology teacher at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville. Pastor Shilby, welcome to the Coffee Hour.
Thanks for welcoming me here.
We are excited to talk about the story behind this book. We talked a little bit about the Bouzine family. Pastor Shilby, what do you know about the Bouzine family? You got to interact with them a little bit. Tell us a little bit about the history of the Bouzine family.
Walter Bouzine was a 1925 graduate of Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis, and he went on to teach in Missouri Synod universities and at our seminary at St. Louis. So he taught at Concordia College at that time, the junior college at Fort Wayne for a few years. He taught at Concordia Seminary in Springfield at the time in their late 20s. His longest teaching position after he taught at Concordia River Forest was at Concordia St. Louis, where he was a professor from 1947 until 1966. And as he worked in the field of church music, his goal in life was to return the Lutheran church to the golden age of liturgical and Lutheran hymnody and music. There's a recent book published probably about 20 years ago called The Life and Work of Walter E. Bouzine, Music for the Church. The Good Shepherd Institute published the book. And the beginning pages describes the difficult and challenging scene in the early 20th century, because some Lutherans at that time did not value the liturgical heritage of the Lutheran Church. Those people tried to embrace more the American Protestant scene, and that really challenged Bouzine to try to return the Lutheran Church to its roots and to appreciate its valuable liturgical and musical heritage. He felt like the Lutheran Church was incomplete without that heritage. So he fought and he worked tirelessly to advance that cause within the Lutheran Church, even helping at Concordia Publishing House establish its editorial board for the music department. There was no music department at CPH until 1942, when he guided the publication of one of the first music catalogs that CPH Music published. So he was instrumental at CPH for about 25 years, guiding the decisions there for music in terms of helping modern-day Lutherans, which in that time would be in the 1940s, 50s, return to the roots of Bach and others from the golden age, as he called it. His daughter had emailed me several years ago, and this is how she described her father. My father's activity did indeed begin the new renaissance in music for the church, and although there were others who also helped advance the cause, he was primarily a lone voice. For this reason, he is often referred to as a pioneer in the field of Lutheran church music. His focus was what he liked to refer to as a golden age of church music, from Johann Walter, first cantor of the Lutheran Church, to J.S. Bach. He had a whole course by that name that he offered the seminary. And of course, renewed use of the Lutheran chorale was a goal of his as well. All of this was to bring music practice in line with the church's theology. That's his daughter, Connie Seddon, who is the one that kind of spearheaded this book project. But as it turns out, this was her father's project back from the 1940s. Those words I just read are words Connie used to describe her father and his work in advancing the cause of Lutheran music in our Lutheran churches.
Benjamin, how much did you know about the Buzin family before diving into this research?
Well, I had read the book that Pastor Shelby referenced, and I knew it pretty well. I had it, but that's the extent of it. I knew Walter Buzin through his reputation. He had edited, he went over to Europe in the mid-century, you know, 50s, 60s, and he collected these great editions from the past, edited them, and Concordia published them. So I had been doing his editions for years. I knew the name, but I didn't have any personal connection until Pastor Shelby put me into connection with this project. I think it was at the Good Shepherd Institute, and he said, "Here, I have a whole, I have an archive here from Connie Seddon, from her father, Walter Buzin. You know him?" Like, yeah, I do. And he had, Pastor Shelby had known Connie Seddon very well. I never met her, unfortunately. And so this was after she had died, and he gave me her archive, which is only a very small box. It's a very small box, but it has really important notes that got me started into the research. It would have been very hard, taken more years without that preparatory work that Walter Buzin and Connie Seddon had done.
I had gotten to know Connie probably around 2007 or 2008. We actually, she drove me back from Fort Wayne to St. Louis after a Good Shepherd Institute conference. I needed a one-way ride, so somehow someone arranged Connie to be my ride back from Fort Wayne to St. Louis. And we got to visiting, and then we would see each other at conferences over the years, Synod Institutes of Church Music and Liturgy, as well as Good Shepherd Institute conferences. And then when I relocated to the St. Louis area, or I should say Southern Illinois, back in 2019, we got reconnected because I was local now. And we socially, you know, went out for lunch a couple times before she, her health took a turn for the worse. And it was when, in her final weeks, when I found out of her health condition, she was hospitalized, I would go up to visit her. She wanted me to assure her that this project that she had been working on would continue. And I had not heard about the project until the hospital room. And she explained it to me. And then once she did go to be with Jesus, her son, Andy, gave me the box that Benjamin referred to earlier when I was serving as a parish pastor in Southern Illinois. And I'm looking at this box and thinking, I don't have the time or really the skills to do much with this box of research. And so I was friends with Benjamin already, so I knew he was the scholar that could pull this all together. So graciously, he and I met at the Good Shepherd Institute. This was November of 22. She passed to Jesus in October of 22. And then just a few weeks later, we reconnected, Benjamin and myself. And it's amazing how this book got written and published really in less than 3 years. That's really incredible. And it's a great work of scholarship on Benjamin's part to complete that project for Connie.
Well, you caught me between books. I was finished number two, and I was looking for something to do. It's like, yes, I want to do that. And I'll just add to what Pastor Shelby said. It was fairly important to Connie Seddon that CPH published this. Her father was, like Pastor Shelby said, greatly involved in teaching and playing, performing in the LCMS. And so much of it has to do with everything has to do with LCMS history in the book, and also the history of CPH and the music department, from the publishing of the first hymnals to the publishing of organist accompaniment edition. We call them a Choralbucher. It was all kind of, it needed to be published by CPH, and I'm very thankful that CPH did was interested in publishing it, and the Lord brought it to fruition in this way.
And because Connie was active at Concordia Historical Institute, CHI also helped support this project.
What was her vision for all of this research that she had gathered? Was it a book? From your conversations with her, what did you see as her vision for this project?
I don't know if she had defined it to the point of a book. She just wanted somehow these men to be remembered. That was her father's concern, that we recall names of church musicians from the 60s and 70s and 80s pretty well. I think of Carl Schalk and Richard Hillert. Those are names still on our minds. But we've forgotten, in her opinion, and I would agree, we've forgotten the generation before them and the generation before them. And her dad's idea, which we learned later, was her dad's idea. This wasn't just Connie's project. It was her dad's project from the 40s, which originally were supposed to be Lutheran Witness articles. Correct, Benjamin?
That's correct.
That was the initial vision that Walter Buzin had, and that never worked out. So Connie kept kind of plugging along at this project throughout her life, here and there. And then she just wanted the names and the lives and the contributions of these people remembered, because it didn't just start in the 60s with Carl Schalk or Richard Hillert or with Ted Beck or others. It was starting with the people chronicled and profiled in the book.
I think, if anything, she had in mind articles. Number one, because like you said, her father and Theodore Graebner at Concordia Seminary had envisioned this to be a series of articles in the Lutheran Witness, and they were to include pictures, which is why the book is called Portraits, which I couldn't find one for Nan Winter, unfortunately, but the rest have pictures. So I think she intended what her father intended, that they be published in serial form. And she, in fact, had published a number of articles in Concordia Historical Institute quarterly herself about her family and her father at the CPH Music Department. So if anything, I think she had envisioned them to be published as articles. But I really thought that this needed a larger, a format that would receive more attention. And hopefully in book form, we'll do that. I mean, I like to think that people read articles, and hopefully that's true. But there's, you could go into the topic, you could get into the history and theology and practices much better in a book form than an article form. And I will say too, I've written a number of articles for the Lutheran Witness. They've all been online so far. And then I'll have one in the print issue in the October Lutheran Witness. So I kind of feel like that has been her fulfillment of her actual dream, you know, Buzin's and Theodore Graebner's dream in 1946, which all fell apart when they introduced a committee to decide who would be featured in the Lutheran Witness. And of course, nobody could agree. So it was Pastor Shelby and me. And so we didn't have any disagreements, and it's all worked out fine. And I'm glad we're publishing a few things in the Lutheran Witness online, too.
We're learning the story behind the book Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music from Concordia Publishing House. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment right here on The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University, Nebraska, discover a distinctly Christian community that equips students to live by faith with courage, character, and conviction. Intentionally combining our Christian faith, Lutheran heritage, rigorous academics, and practical real-life experiences, we prepare students to fulfill a higher purpose in their vocations and life. Learn more about Concordia University, Nebraska at our website, cune.edu. That's cune.edu.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We're learning about the story behind the book Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music from Concordia Publishing House. We're talking with Benjamin Clogy, church organist and musicologist and author of the book, and the Reverend Scott Shilby, assistant pastor and minister of music at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church in Overland and theology teacher at Metro East Lutheran High School. He was the steward of all the resources, all the materials that the Bazine family had collected for much of the research behind this book. Now, the materials that were handed over to you from the Bazine family, Benjamin, what was it like getting that box? I mean, all this history packed into a box. How did you feel that moment being handed over these materials?
Well, I was actually kind of underwhelmed because I thought for sure there would be some profound recollections of somebody or some lost manuscript. And there were a few manuscripts, letters written back and forth, which weren't available elsewhere, but that was a small portion. Mostly it was copied articles from Concordia Historical Institute, and there were some notes from Bouzine, the most valuable of which was his list of people he thought were really important. And then Connie Seddon's addendum to that list. And that framework of people probably saved me months of having to figure out. Really, I had not heard of many of these people. There's 13 fellows that I profiled in the book, and I had not heard of most of them. I mean, we all heard of C.F.W. Walter, you know, but I had heard of Friedrich Lochner, I'd heard of Martin Lochner, but I knew nothing about them. So it would have taken a long time for me to ascertain who's important in this time period. So in one sense, the contents were underwhelming. There wasn't a lot, but what was there really helped set the framework. When they started this project in 1946 for the Lutheran Witness, they didn't have the benefit which we have now, which is some 80 years hence distance. And Bouzine had written to Edward Clammer at CPH at one point and said, you know, we're forgetting a lot of these people. Some of them may deserve to be forgotten. Maybe they didn't really do that much, but many of them really prepared the way for the musicians to come. Like Professor Shilby said, Carl Schalk, Richard Hilbert, that great Concordia River Forest tradition. And so it was actually easier for me 80 years hence to see who was really important in setting the basis for Missouri Synod sacred music in the second half of the 20th, century. And so I would say I had that perspective that they did not have, and that box really helped me to get into their mind, and I was able to get into that fairly easily thanks to that archive.
It should be noted that Walter Bouzine does not have a chapter in the book, because he has a whole book about himself. So we would want listeners to pick up the book, Music for the Church, the Life and Work of Walter E. Bouzine by Kirby L. Kariath. That would give you a biography of Bouzine and his contributions, and also essays that he wrote, and an index of all of his musical publications. And most, I know my church choir files have some of Bouzine's work still in it. And we just sang A Faithful Shepherd Is My Lord back for Good Shepherd Sunday in April. So his songs are still found in our libraries. His editorial relationships with our choirs are still there.
Yeah. And he's a name. I know that name, but it sounds like I need to read that book. I think I would learn a lot. Benjamin, tell us about the research that went into this. Once you got the box of things and you have the list, where did you go from there to go from the box of stuff to a book?
Well, I identified the names which were given to me, and a cursory internet search determined which of these people were really influential. And I think that everybody that Bouzine had identified, and there's probably four or five that I omitted from the list. So the 13, actually, I don't remember exactly how many because there was Sedan's list and there was Bouzine's list, and I combined them and omitted some. But, you know, I just did a cursory internet search. Who are these people? You know, what is there? And the Concordia Historical Institute was really good to steer me to other resources. So it's very easy to get lost into rabbit trails. And then by that point, when I had identified my people, I thought, okay, I'm going to get into the rabbit trails or rabbit holes, whatever they're called. So I actually started with Albert Beck. He's one of the latter chapters, and he was at Concordia River Forest. And I corresponded with his family, and they sent me his biographical notes, unpublished, and it was just wonderful to connect. I tried to connect personally with as many, you know, family members that I could, and Beck was the best example of that. And because once you start making discoveries, you just want to make more of them. This is so fun. You're uncovering something. It's kind of like science, you know, you're discovering new formulas or whatever scientists do. But for me, it was discovering new musical techniques or how liturgy was performed 100 years ago. That was so exciting. And this box, this archive box, really got me into that.
This is why I can't do research, because I would be going down all those rabbit holes and never get the project done because of all those interesting stories. I would just be researching it for 20 years, mm-hmm. reading all the interesting stories.
This is how I make podcasts for the Ladies Lounge. It's just rabbit trails all over the place.
This is why we have professionals like Benjamin Clogy writing these great books.
also that.
I'm grateful that Benjamin took this on, this project, because I didn't want to be the steward of this box of research for an eternity, because I couldn't really do much with it. So I'm really grateful that Benjamin took it upon himself and got it done.
And I will say, going back to a letter that Bouzine wrote to Ed Clammer at CPH when he advocated, I believe it was 1969, he said, we need to publish this somehow. Theodore Graebner had died in 1950. This project was long dead. But he said, is there something we can do? Can we publish this? And Clammer said, really? No, we really can't. There's no medium to do this. Why don't you have PhD students do their dissertations on this? And there's a letter that says to this effect, you know, do PhD dissertations. Well, when was the last time that you've read a PhD dissertation or that you remembered the PhD dissertation? And that's not a good way to preserve this knowledge. So I'm really grateful for CPH. They really enthusiastically supported this project in the end. I'm grateful for that. And I think Connie Seddon she'd be very pleased about the format, that it's a book, that it's published by CPH, and that they've done such a good job of laying it out, the graphics and the layout and everything. They've really done great. So I think it's a great fulfillment of her vision.
You mentioned that CPH enthusiastically supported this. What did they say about this when you finally got the yes that this is going to be a book?
Well, these things are long processes, and they have their ups and downs, and they always take a while. But you know, I had a great editor in Laura Lane and Peter Reske, who works in the music department, and they were just very supportive. And they think this is something that's going to contribute to the scholarship in Lutheran music, and they're glad that CPH can contribute to this.
Pastor Shilby, when you finally, I assume you've finally gotten your hands on the a copy of this and finally got to read it, what was your response going from handing Benjamin this box of notes to now getting to read all of that research compiled in a book?
It's a wonderful resource that is very thorough and readable at the same time, to help honor the lives of these men who have advanced the church's song in their own historical contexts and in their own unique way. The book is just a great visual piece of that you can hold in your hands of literature. It's laid out really nicely. I'm really impressed with the fonts and the style that was chosen to support the information within the book. It's a very readable, accessible book, especially if you're interested in synod history you get that musical part of synod history that often gets overlooked.
This is my third book, and everybody always says that my writing is accessible. So I think I need to learn some bigger words and get out my thesaurus and make my writing a little bit more inaccessible.
I did have to go look up a word last time we talked.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear you say that.
Yes, lugubrious.
And now he uses it all the time. So.
Lugubrious, yeah, of course.
I think the book honors Bouzine's life in that he always was trying to call the Lutherans back to their roots. Now, in this book, the roots aren't the 16th or 17th centuries, per se, but it's the early 20th century and the late 19th century. Those are part of our synod roots. And so the book honors his life, too, even though he's not in the book. It's achieving what he set out to do with his own ministry of bringing us back to Lutheran sources for music and worship.
We have just a minute or two-ish left, but I really want to know if there was a favorite part of this project for you, a little fact you didn't know, or a person you discovered that is now your new favorite person in synod history, or just something from this project that really brought you some unexpected joy.
Benjamin? Me?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Well, both of you, but yes.
I would say there's a lot of those, but one I would identify is Friedrich Lochner, the great liturgist at Trinity, Milwaukee, and then also at the Springfield Seminary. I, researching him at Concordia Historical Institute, I found his little drawings and his little paintings of buildings and hot air balloons and churches, Trinity St. Louis, Trinity Milwaukee. He did pictures of those. I think it's watercolor, actually. I'm not a visual artist, so I know. But Lochner was trained as a visual artist. And just those discoveries, totally non-musical. But this fellow was creative in every capacity. That was one of the discoveries that I enjoyed making.
Pastor Shelby, do you have a favorite?
Well, Lochner, as I read the book, he actually started his ministry in the Edwardsville, Illinois area. So that was an interesting connection for me. So I didn't realize. I knew the name. I knew of his seminary background in writing about the divine service. But I did not know he started in Southern Illinois, where I live. So that was kind of a unique part of reading the book.
Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music from Concordia Publishing House by Benjamin Kologi. Man, what a great book. I need a stack of them because I keep recommending it to so many people. I guess they could go to CPH and find it too.
They could.
Or anywhere you buy books. Yeah, you can find it there. Benjamin Kologi, church organist and musicologist, author of Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music. Benjamin, thanks so much for joining us for this series and for today's episode.
Thanks for having me.
And the Reverend Scott Shelby, assistant pastor and minister of music at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church in Overland and theology teacher at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville. Thank you so much for your contribution to this book and for being our guest today.
Thanks for inviting me.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.